Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national and local focus on gender, sexuality and feminism.
Hi, I'm Donna Bridges, Associate Professor of Sociology at Charles Sturt University. This month, we're shining a light on the issue of everyday sexism in the workplace, a topic that is often dismissed or misunderstood, but which continues to have profound impacts on individuals and in workplaces, and shows up broad patterns of gender inequality. Joining me today are two incredible guests who bring both lived experience and deep professional expertise to this conversation. Grace Gardner is the Research Director at Elevate Consulting Partners and a PhD candidate. She's an expert in the areas of violence against women, sexual harassment, and discrimination affecting minority groups. Grace has worked at the Human Rights Commission and recently wrote a powerful piece in The Women's Agenda on the impact of everyday sexism. Also with us is Alicia McFarlane, lecturer in paramedicine at Charles Sturt University and manager of engagement for the Australasian College of Paramedicine. Alicia is also completing a PhD, which explores gender inequality in the paramedic profession. She's a passionate advocate for gender inclusion, equity, and cultural change in health and emergency services, with a particular focus on how structural and cultural forces shape workplace inequality. Together, we'll be exploring what everyday sexism looks like, how it affects people in their working lives, and why addressing it is crucial for building safer, fairer, and more inclusive workplaces for everyone. We'll also talk about how everyday sexism can escalate into more serious forms of harm, the intersecting experiences of women of colour and marginalised groups, and importantly, what we can all do to call it out and challenge it when we see it. This is a conversation we all need to hear. Grace, you've said, but everyday sexism is hard to define because it's so common. Can you tell us about this in a nutshell?
Hi, Donna. Hi, Alicia. Thank you for having me, first of all. And yeah, everyday sexism is really common. And by its nature, it's also kind of casual, and it can be really difficult to pick up on, especially if it's not targeted at you or a group that you belong to. So it slots into everyday life really easily, hence the name, everyday sexism. And it can encompass an almost limited amount of actions or occurrences. So I'll talk about some of the key aspects of everyday sexism that we can use to kind of identify it, even though it is so varied and diverse. Everyday sexism is usually interpersonal. So it's usually one or more people saying or doing something that impacts on one or more others based on their gender or their gender identity. These are actions or statements that play into gender norms and serve to belittle a person or a group based on their gender, or to express that they're less than because of their gender or their gender identity. The thing about everyday sexism, which makes it so difficult to address sometimes, is that people who engage in it often don't even realize that they're doing it, which is the nature of sexism more broadly as well. It's so pervasive in society that it pops up in our actions, our words, our beliefs, without necessarily us realizing it or intending it. Everyday sexism targets, humiliates, harms people or a group of people based on their gender. But a really crucial aspect to understanding everyday sexism is that it is perceived to be low level, which is to say that actions that constitute everyday sexism, we often treat them with a bit of plausible deniability or benefit of the doubt. Like, we consider them misunderstandings or perhaps mildly inappropriate, but not a really big deal. Workplaces in particular may not consider it to be an issue. This means that the damage of and the harm done by everyday sexism is hidden quite effectively because it's not considered to be a symptom of deeper inequalities, but it absolutely is. Common forms of everyday sexism could be things like people making a joke or a disparaging comment that generalizes women or gender diverse people, particularly if it's based on stereotypes about women. It can also look like constant, persistent interrupting or talking over or dismissing the contributions of women. And it can also look like something that's very common in workplaces is expecting or always asking people in the workplace to perform certain tasks based on gender norms.
And so what I'm hearing here is we're just used to it. We'd just become used to it in workplaces as well. So, Alicia, you interviewed women in the paramedicine profession about everyday sexism and have published an article about the problem. Can you give us some examples of everyday sexism that our listeners might recognise?
Yeah, sure, Donna. So I think probably off the back of what Grace was talking about in the way that things are replicated from societal expectations through the workplace. So those things that you can recognise in any workplace, the expectations of women cleaning up after lunch or men lifting heavy things. In my workplace as a paramedic, the other thing that we see is the division of clinical roles, which kind of replicate those similar things as well, which are the men do the messier, more traumatic, perceived harder jobs, and the women do the softer jobs that require more, perhaps more compassion or empathy or perceived compassion and empathy. And so whilst that may seem at the time appropriate from the outset and that it's in the best interest of the patient, certainly from our perspective, often that is a version of everyday sexism, and that is just the gendered expectation inside our profession. Like I said, there's a division of labour, and then there's also the expectations of what everybody does inside the workplace as well. It's the language that's used. It's the expectations of driving ability, for example, is another one that's often laughed at or commented on. Oh, you've allowed a woman to drive the ambulance today, because it doesn't just come from, as Grace suggested, it's often interpersonal in nature, but the interpersonal comments don't necessarily come from colleagues. Sometimes they come from public perceptions towards the clinician. And so it's about the public's perception then of what a man or a woman should do inside said profession. I think for me in the professional space and in the workplace, that's what it looks like for me. But you can draw really similar comparisons in different ways in lots of workplaces, I think.
Grace, your women's agenda piece says that everyday sexism puts us in our place, us as in women and gender diverse people. You're referring here to strategies designed to undermine people. How does that phenomenon operate to undermine?
Absolutely. So everyday sexism, I think it works on a lot of levels to undermine women and gender diverse people. So at a direct, more individual level, everyday sexism works as kind of a persistent reminder of difference or of your unequal status. So it's a little note when you experience it or when you witness it, that your presence in a workplace or in a public space is conditional, and that you're being held to certain standards and subject to certain beliefs and expectations that others perhaps are not. And this is based on your gender or your gender identity. On an individual level, this can be really demoralizing, and particularly it can impact on a person's confidence and their ambitions in their career if they're experiencing this in the workplace, if they're sort of constantly being underestimated or not expected to do well, or if their achievements are being dismissed or overlooked. It can also stifle the contributions and ambitions of women, gender diverse people, and also often other minoritized people. This tends to lead to a lack of diversity, or even if there appears to be, you know, good workplace diversity, just in terms of numbers, it can still contribute to a culture where only in-groups, such as, you know, straight white men, feel comfortable to really contribute and to really take an integrated role and part in their jobs. Everyday sexism can kind of stifle broader participation in public life. So everyday sexism, like I said, it reminds us of the rules that we as women or as gender diverse people are expected to follow. And the broader inequalities, discriminations, and harms we see against women remind us of how these rules are enforced and how they can be enforced if we deviate from them. A key feature of everyday sexism is that it appears to not be that big of a deal. You know, it's just a joke. It's not much to be taken seriously. But it's really useful to look at it as a symptom of a society that operates on and kind of tacitly accepts gendered inequality and gender-based harm. So, for example, in Australia, I think experiences of everyday sexism feel a lot more loaded and a lot more potent when we remember that, for example, the gender pay and leadership gaps remain really significant. Women who work still undertake much more unpaid labor in the form of care work and domestic work than men do. And that feminized professions such as care and education go undervalued and under-remunerated. And also that gender-based violence is a really urgent, pervasive and persistent crisis in this country as well. So everyday sexism, I think, exposes the social and cultural norms and beliefs which are held by ordinary people, often without them quite realizing it, but which legitimize and kind of obscure these systemic inequalities and harms and make them much more difficult to address.
And normalizes gender inequality, I think, is what you're saying, and what Alicia was saying about the men are doing the more important clinical roles and the women are doing the more domestic ones. So how does the cumulative effects of everyday sexism on women and gender diverse people impact on them, Alicia, mentally, emotionally, professionally?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's hard to quantify those things because of its casual nature. It can creep up. Sometimes it's not an immediate effect that we see. And I think what women have reported, certainly in the research that I've both been involved with and read, is that it is cumulative in nature, but it just eats away at their confidence and slowly starts to impact mental health. And then it also graduates to physical health and confidence. It also, and I think Grace mentioned, it stifles their career aspirations because they suddenly start to lose this confidence and start to feel something other than empowered or they're othered in their own workplace. So they don't feel like they're able to fully participate and achieve all those career goals that they have. I think something that's really significant about everyday sexism in a lot of instances in workplaces is that it isn't just interpersonal from a one-on-one perspective. We often see it in group situations too, which is of real significance because it's often laughed off and, you know, as we described earlier, that it's just humor and people can't take a joke and comments like that. But it's very much done intentionally in group situations to really assert those positions of power and privilege and dominance, I suppose, traditional places of dominance. Usually it's men that sit at the top of that hierarchy and women are sort of sit secondary to that. And instances of everyday sexism help reinforce those notions. The other thing that is of significance too with everyday sexism is that not only do men do it, but women actually are seen to replicate some of those behaviors, even unknowingly, so that they can achieve, I guess, what their career goals are, or even just to fit in their workplace, will often take part in some aspects related to everyday sexism that sometimes belittle other women because then it moves, I guess, the heat off of them and also allows them to feel accepted by their male counterparts. And I think that's a really important part of the puzzle is to say that, you know, sometimes women themselves aren't even aware that they're a part of this problem in that way. And not only are they affected by it directly, but indirectly they can partake in it by either not saying anything or perhaps laughing at a joke or even, you know, using perhaps inappropriate or non-inclusive language. So I think all of those things probably contribute to the significance of the problem. That is hard to capture because, as Grace mentioned, it's not legislated. It's not something that's easy to find in a policy or to pinpoint. That in and of itself makes it difficult.
And that makes sense that women would join in with norms of the workplace in order to fit in and to be part of the dominant group. Grace, how does race, class, disability or sexuality, like sexual orientation, intersect with gender to shape how people experience sexism at work?
Yeah, this is, I think, a really important point and a really important question. I think it's been overlooked in the mainstream for a long time, but it's getting more attention now, which I think is really encouraging to see. And it is thanks to the advocacy of people who experience these intersecting forms of discrimination. So we know that women and gender diverse people whose social identities expose them to multiple forms of discrimination are more likely to experience gender-based violence and prejudice, for example. So moving away from everyday sexism, which is difficult to research, which is under-researched and difficult to measure at present, we can look at kind of other similar forms of discrimination and based on gender and how that breaks down in an intersectional way. So a good example of this is sexual harassment. According to research from the Human Rights Commission, ANROS, and lots of other groups in Australia who are doing this research, we see that non-binary Australians, First Nations Australians, particularly First Nations women, Australians with disability, and migrant and refugee women in Australia are much more likely than the national average to have experienced sexual harassment in the last 5 years. And like I said, it is more difficult to measure everyday sexism because it's so varied, so common, and because it's considered less serious. It's under-researched. But we know from research that women and gender diverse people who experience other forms of discrimination don't experience this discrimination and sex-based discrimination, gender-based discrimination separately. These issues aren't siloed. So our gender, our race, class, ability, sexuality, and more parts of our social identities interact and produce unique experiences and particular forms of marginalization and discrimination. We definitely need to get better at researching and communicating these experiences, as well as listening to and amplifying the voices of advocates and experts who speak up about these phenomena. When we try to address sexism, we need to understand that it won't be successful if we don't also understand and respond to racism, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, and all the other forms of inequality and injustice we see in society because they overlap.
That's right. And we do downplay it. People might say, why bother? It is just a joke, or it's just somebody asking you to do a different, you know, a gendered job. But in your research, Alicia, you noticed that everyday sexism can escalate. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I think it was actually a really interesting finding and maybe something I hadn't truly considered. I, through reading and research, had started to value the significance of everyday sexism to some degree in isolation, but didn't realise that in many ways it was being used as a tester, for want of a better word. So often experiences of sexual harassment, when traced backwards, you could find that there were significant experiences of escalating everyday sexism leading up to those, I guess, I don't want to call them more significant because I don't want to downplay everyday sexism, but I suppose the more obvious experiences of sexual harassment, or those that are easier to capture either by law or just by experience, if we backtracked, they could very much identify that there were little instances along the way of moments of disrespect or poor language or comments of a sexual nature that they themselves had dismissed. And the other really interesting finding, I suppose, from a healthcare perspective in my research was that the experience of everyday sexism, if experienced indirectly by a patient, for example, had the potential to negatively impact their care. So patients who have witnessed everyday sexism are less likely to communicate with their carers or less likely to speak up if they have an increase in pain or a new presenting problem. So it then starts to show this really important ripple effect that can be experienced, not just by the person that has this direct experience of everyday sexism, but in fact, the effect on their peers, the effect on their workforce, and then potentially the effect on the people that they're caring for.
Thanks, Alicia. So what can we do about it? This is a question for both of you. What are some of the strategies or tools that people can use to respond to everyday sexism in the moment, but without putting themselves at risk?
I have two strategies people can use. The first is, you know, standing up for and showing solidarity with others, particularly peers, colleagues in your workplace, if you notice them experiencing everyday sexism, I think this is really important because part of the silence and the lack of understanding around everyday sexism is that it can be so isolating. And I think this sort of speaks to what Alicia was saying too about the negative impacts and the really rippling negative impacts of everyday sexism. It's so pervasive, but contradictorily, people experience it as so isolating, so alienating. You know, if you're the only person who seems to notice or be affected by a joke, for example, that everyone else in the workplace is laughing at, it can be really scary to speak up. Shedding light on the issue, you know, reading up about it, understanding a little bit more about it, and letting people know, letting your colleagues know that they're not alone when they experience everyday sexism and that they're not supported if they engage in it, I think is really crucial. It sort of creates a new social expectations and social dynamic in a workplace that can be really powerful. And another strategy that people can use and something that people can consider is reporting. And this goes into what Alicia and I have been speaking about how difficult it is to measure or understand how pervasive everyday sexism is and how it affects different people, is because it's so low level. And I agree with Alicia in saying that it's difficult to talk about it as less serious, but it is at least considered really low level. People tend to think it's not worth reporting. And people who are in charge of responding to reports in workplaces might not actually take reports of everyday sexism seriously. They might not understand that everyday sexism lays the foundation for other gendered harms to take place in the work. And this is one of the reasons why Elevate, for example, developed Safe Space, to sort of provide a place where people in the workplace can confidentially and confidently report incidents, actions, and concerns that might seem lower level.
Thank you. Alicia, do you have any strategies?
I mean, they're great strategies from Grace. That's what I would like to lean into, I suppose, is acknowledging my own response to everyday sexism. I think I've been a part of the problem at some point by whether that be not speaking up, by going along with perhaps something that was said in jest, was clearly sexist, and really just required someone else to point it out and not accept it. And I've been a party to that. So that speak up culture that Grace mentioned is so important. I can almost semi-rehearse how I might approach it a little better in the future. If I was to speak up, what might that look like for me? Because I don't think it's something that you can just naturally do off the cuff. Some people can, but a lot of people probably need to go through a bit of mental rehearsals. The way that I respond to those is with a level of curiosity. So, that's an interesting comment. What do you mean by that? And actually ask the person to elaborate further on what they meant by comments about, isn't that your job to clean up the workplace because you're a woman? Oh, that's an interesting comment. What do you mean by that? Where's that come from? So I think even though we probably know the answer to that, asking them to reflect on what they've just said and explain it in a more intentional way removes the casual nature, makes them confront what they say, and in some ways publicly calls them out on it anyway. So if you were to change your behaviour, if you were to engage in a speak-up culture, what does that look like for you as a person and how would you go about it?
Fantastic. Thank you. And is there any message you'd like to leave with us today about sexism in the workplace?
For me, it's nothing small. The important thing that I've recognised both through research and personal and professional reflection is that all instances of sexism matter, be they small, be they captured by legislation, be they obvious, hidden, whatever it might be. But ultimately, all sexism really serves to reinforce, I guess, a gendered workplace. And it's not that we want people to, you know, leave their gender at the door as they enter a workforce. We want to value everybody's gender inside that workforce without making assumptions about where that person belongs because of their gender.
I would 100% agree with Alicia. I think that's really important. And to sort of build on that, I think it's really important to understand that it's not a question of if everyday sexism occurs in your daily life, in your workplace. It's a problem everywhere. I think we would be hard pressed to find a workplace or institution in Australia where everyday sexism is not entrenched. And it's so important to notice and understand and address it because it is harmful in itself, and because it creates a foundation for compounded gender-based harms.
Well, fantastic. Thank you both for being with me today. I've found that a really valuable conversation, especially that bit at the end of advice about what to do, because I think you're right, it does happen everywhere. So thank you.
Thank you, Donna. It's been a really great conversation. And thank you, Alicia, as well.
Yeah, thanks, Grace. It's been a really great conversation. And thanks very much, Donna, for asking all those really important questions.
I'm now joined with my colleagues, Cliff and Sonia. Hi, Cliff and Sonia. That was a really interesting interview, wasn't it? And one of the things that has struck me the most is, how do we respond? Both Alicia and Grace gave us tips and tricks for dealing with everyday sexism in the workplace. But I must say, I find that kind of thing difficult too. What about you two?
I think it's a complex one, because I think there are roles that we in society have to play, which is learned behavior over generations. Some might even say it goes back to, you know, us being hunter-gatherers, which we no longer are, but we haven't changed our roles. And some of those roles are so innate in us because we're just programmed that way. Like, I like to think of myself as, like, my research is on diversity, equity, and inclusion. I like to do my work to empower groups, but there are times when I've caught myself seeing a female pilot walk on a plane and go, oh, and surprise myself in that response. And why am I sharing this on a radio show? Because I think we all experience these moments of where we perform or where we succumb to everyday sexism. We need to now be brave enough to call ourselves out, perhaps, to be able to eventually call other people out and to model that good behavior.
Absolutely. I think I'm one of the people who is one of the women who probably goes along with it because of career choices that I made. I look back now of, you know, 20 plus more years in paramedicine, and I think I definitely have played along with that game of, you know, continually laughing and joking and things like that, you know, just to inane comments and stuff that were probably trivial, but I've contributed to that and not stopped it because it seemed easier to just go along with the joke than to confront it. And I don't think I had the toolkit to confront it. I think that that's something that I'm getting better at now. I'm starting to realize that I, you know, I can call it out and I can say things, and you know, I'm learning phrases to be able to call that out that I should have probably learned 20 years ago, but, you know, better late than never.
It is one of those things that I think that comes from experience, doesn't it, Sonia? Because if you've never been exposed to it, you really don't know what other triggers you're looking for, what other signs. You just think that that's the norm. And once you start reflecting on it and then putting in place, separating the norm that we are taught through socialization in a certain world through what is okay, I think that's when we start looking at these challenges and building skills, resources, little statements to use in response.
One of the things I am aware of and usually call people out on is when they start bagging women because they're the boss, things like that. They say, oh yeah, most of the bosses I've had that are women have been the worst. And in those situations, I will say, have you never had a male boss that was a problem? Have they all been lovely? And then they'll go, oh, no. So I have learned to question, but I thought the advice they gave us was really good, particularly around rehearsing. So if you're getting it quite a lot, I think rehearsing can be a good strategy. Get used to saying it, get it right, and then practice it a bit out there where the sexism is occurring. Well, thanks, Cliff and Sonia. We'll see you next month with Alicia McFarlane from the Gender Network, who will be running the show for us.
Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by the Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google the Gender Network at Charles Sturt.